Okay, good morning. Today we're going to talk about the phases of the Baal Tshuva and how to work within those phases. So I'm going to share a few work observations from the last 30 years of my work, just watching people as they grow, watching my own self as I grow. I wrote an article about it, which I had translated into Spanish, and I brought several copies. You can take it with you. I did have an actual Spanish-speaking person read the article after I got it translated. It's not a perfect translation, but you'll get the general idea if you want the article afterwards. So let's just talk about some stages. So I've identified 7 stages of the Baal Tshuva. So the first stage is the beginning. And there's a lot of reasons for beginning. Why do people start to look? It's interesting to think about as I have grown in my observance and observing the community, I have observed that many from birth people, we abbreviate that in English as FFB, many FFBs look down upon Baal Tshuva, look at them with some level of disdain. And what I have learned over the years is that one reason for that, there's 2 main reasons. One is that many Baal Tshuvas are a little bit nuts, for whatever reason. They had something in their life that stirred them up, that made them a little bit, made them seek, but it's also a little something weird about them. So it's true, there's a lot of nutsness in Baal Tshuvas. But another reason, which took me longer to understand, is that many from birth people are not that comfortable with their own place in Yiddishkeit. And a lot of people feel like, if I had the opportunity, I might not be doing this. Like, if Hashem didn't tell me I have to do this, I wouldn't do this. If Hashem would just wave a magic wand and say, you're not Jewish, or the Torah doesn't apply to you, you're out, a lot of people would take that door out. And so if that's the case, they wonder why people would take the door in. Like, what's wrong with you? You were born not having to do this. I have to do this. But you chose it. You must be weird. So there is that attitude too, which was a fascinating thing for me to learn. I spent some time in Lakewood with an FFB in Lakewood who had never met a Baal Tshuva before. Yeah. So I was staying at her house, and she said, do you mind if I ask you a personal question? I said, sure, whatever you want. She said, why is it that Baal Tshuva use colored tablecloths on Shabbos? That was the personal question. I was ready for any question. That was the personal question. So, but it was a fascinating question, because for me it taught me a lot about what she thinks about me. And it really helped me understand this important part, because that's how I answered her. In order to become a Baal Tshuva, or a Ger, either one, you have to be chutzpahdik. You have to have the willingness to be different. You have to be willing to separate yourself from your family, and from your past, and from your way of life, and embrace a new paradigm. Just because you've embraced it doesn't mean your inner nature of chutzpah and willingness to be different disappears, right? So even if you're keeping halacha, maybe you like a tapestry tablecloth. Turns out it doesn't show spots, right? So when you clear the table and you're about to serve dessert, it still looks good. Unlike white, it turns out, which looks terrible when you clear it. I use white now because I'm trying to fit in. When I had little kids, it was tapestry all over the place.
Plastic.
Okay. No plastic. Are you kidding? I want to ruin my shidduchim by putting plastic. So, anyway. So, beginnings, right? So that's the first phase, is why do people start? And there's all kinds of answers to that, as many as there are people. One person had a car accident and almost died and realized, oh my gosh, there's something more to life than this. One person met somebody who's from and sat at their Shabbos table and thought, this is so beautiful, I want to have a family like that. One person had a romantic encounter with somebody, or just a crush on somebody that's from and that brought them in. One person read an article. One person was abused by their parents, one person, whatever. There's so many different reasons. One person was just backpacking through Europe and decided they might as well hit Israel too, and they got picked up off the wall, want to go to a class. They went to a class, and a year later, they're going home from. Right? So there's a million different stories how it gets started. And some people don't even know how it gets started. One thing that we say about our lives is that we live our lives going forwards. We only understand our lives looking backwards. So many times you don't even realize what your process was until you're a few years away from it and you can look back and see what it was. But phase one is beginning. What makes you start this process? What makes you initiate the search? Okay, so phase two is wonder and awe. You've actually stepped in to start looking around and you realize, oh my gosh, this is bigger than I ever thought. You know, I mean, I went to Reform summer camp, or I had a Seder at my grandparents, or every year we had a Seder. The first Jewish Seder that I went to, in my childhood, I went to some Christian Seders, and then I made a Seder, and then I went to a Jewish Seder. The first Jewish Seder that I went to had matzah and challah on the table. Because what else would you serve for a Jewish meal but challah? And of course matzah, because it's Pesach. But it had both on the table. So there are many people who go to Seders like that every year. They go to the Seder. It's interesting. I spoke to one secular family, and the mother, who was in her 60s, was telling me with pride that her daughter is now going to be making the Seders from now on, and she's been practicing the whole month. She's been making a roast every week to make sure that it comes out good for the Seder. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, that's your whole, you know, thought of a Seder is a family meal with a good roast. You know? And she's been practicing for a month to be able to make a good Seder. So there are people whose Jewish lives are like that, right? And now that they open the door, they realize, oh my gosh, Judaism is much bigger than a Seder without challah, or a Seder with actually going through the Haggadah, or Rosh Hashanah, or actually fasting the entire Yom Kippur. You know, many people make Kiddush on Yom Kippur. Just a little grape juice, little crackers, just to get you through to the end. You know? I'm serious. I've met people like this. So it definitely happens. So stepping in to look around, you realize, oh my gosh, this is much bigger than I ever thought it would be. That's going to a few classes, that's reading a little bit online, that's having a conversation with somebody, but it's opening up the door to the vastness. And when you open that door, you realize how small you are. And it's a little intimidating. Like, this is so much bigger than I ever thought. And especially if you open that door as an adult, especially as an accomplished adult, you're already a physician, you're already an attorney, you're already a mother of many, you're already working in the world, you're already accomplished as an adult, and all of a sudden you become a preschooler. And it's scary to realize you can't even read. You know, you don't even recognize the letters. You don't know the language. You don't know what people are talking about. It's a very scary feeling for an adult. I'm thankful that I had that phase as a child, as a teenager, when everything is new, no matter what you're doing. The whole world is new. When you're a teenager, you know, you becoming a microbiologist or an astronaut or a physician or an Orthodox Jew, it's all a new pathway. It's all a new learning curve, whatever. You don't have to make a full shift. You just keep learning forward. But it's a scary thing for adults. And it actually took me into my adulthood to have patience for adult Balei Tshuva. Because as a 20-something-year-old lay Kiruv practitioner, I used to be very impatient with people I was working with. I was like, I already told you the MS. Let's go. How can we not show her Shabbos? You know, like, it's been a month, okay? It really took me into my mid-30s to develop respect and patience for people in their process, to realize that once you're an adult, it's a big change. Because for me, it didn't feel like that. But for the people I was working with, it's a huge change. And it took me a while to really respect how many changes have to be made, how many paradigms have to be shifted, how many relationships are strained with an adult Baal Tshuva. So that's something to realize and to respect. Okay. Stage three is the trepidation of observance, the beginnings, the testings of observance. Maybe giving up pork, maybe giving up shellfish, maybe not driving on Shabbat, maybe just not doing electricity on Shabbat, but still driving. Some people drive on Shabbat, but they drive differently on Shabbat. They don't listen to the radio. Really, there are people who start piece by piece. It's not all or nothing. Right? I was working with one nurse who had to work on Shabbat, but she wanted to start keeping Shabbat, but she didn't know what to do. As a nurse, you know, she's still working on Shabbat, but she's not fully taking it on yet. So I told her, wear your pearls, It's Shabbat. Get dressed up. You wear your pearls with your uniform. You can take the stairs. You have to write in the charts. You have to call people and talk. But you don't have to take the elevators. Right? You could take the stairs on Shabbat. And for lunch, you can make Kiddush before you eat. You know, it's like it's not all or nothing. You can start a little bit. But even starting that little bit, even taking out your grape juice that you packed in your water bottle, right, in the lunchroom, the staff lunchroom, before you're going to have lunch, you feel weird. It's uncomfortable. You're not sure if you want to do it or not do it, but you want to be like... So there's that trepidation, that stepping into observance, that just practicing a little bits and pieces around the edges while you're trying it on. Will this work for me? Okay, then comes stage four. Stage four is a stage that lasts a long time, and that's the accelerated acceptance of things, where you really start to take things on. During that stage, that's when your kiruv professional is so proud of you, or the Shabbos table hosts that you've gone to, they're thrilled because they start to see their fruit blossom, and you're koshering your kitchen, and you're starting to keep Shabbos, and you put up all your pants, and you're wearing skirts, you put on tzitzis, like whatever it is, and everybody around you is just so thrilled with their efforts coming to fruition, and with how beautiful you look, and your life is, and every little thing, and everybody's clapping their hands for you, so you feel excited too. Not only are you excited about your own transition in observance, but you get all that approval, right? And so many people around you just being so excited about it. There's a lot of initial approval and recognition. And then there's the taste of the new. Everybody likes new. Want the newest iPhone, whatever, the newest appliance, the newest fashions. Everybody likes new. New is something that we want to incorporate into our lives. So this is a really fun phase because not only do you get the external approval, but you get the internal rush of taking on new stuff, and it feels good because you've already made the decision you're going to do this. You're not scared yet, so all the new stuff that comes, it's like it's pretty exciting to take on new. In this phase, there are some complications, right? So the first complication is a very naive embracing. Variation A, I would say, of level four is a naive embrace or over submission. That's when your parents are worried that you're being brainwashed, right? And your friends are worried too. A friend of mine wrote me a letter when I was in Israel. She was really funny. Susan Thompson, a non-Jewish friend. She was very concerned what I was doing, right? So first of all, the whole tzniyas thing really bothered her. She went on a one-woman mission to keep me anchored in the real world. So she knew that the mailbox in the yeshiva that I was attending, the seminary I was attending, the mailbox was a shoebox. And so everybody went through everybody's letters to pick out their own. So she didn't send me letters. She sent me postcards. So the picture would be obvious to everybody who went through the mailbox. They were all naked ladies. So she sent me regular naked lady postcards that she knew would be in that box that would be addressed to me. And like, so not only did she do that, but she sent me a letter very concerned. She had a hard time at home. I helped her overcome some of her stuff. You know, high schoolers, they talk about their lives and how difficult they are, which they might be, and hers was. So she wrote me a letter about how, she wrote a whole story about how there was a bird with a broken wing, and another bird came and set the wing and healed her and taught her how to fly. And now how she couldn't believe that that very bird that taught her how to fly is voluntarily entering into a cage for life and will never have the freedom to fly again. So that's what one could perceive, depending on the stage it's going. You could perceive that even if the person isn't in this variation of naive or over-submission. But there, this is a risk in this stage of taking on that one might take on very quickly or take on without understanding or take on with over-submission to authority without looking at themselves in it. But that's one of the variations here. Variation two is the very passionate taker-honor of mitzvot. That's the missionary, or the educator, and the enforcer. right? So one who's constantly wants to tell you. They don't say, would you like a strawberry? They say, would you like to make a gori priya dhamma? Right? So they're constantly trying to educate you. Not only that, though, they want to enforce, right? You're making a salad, and they say, wait a minute, you're about to do borer, right? So there's that type that's constantly trying. They just learned the mitzvah of tohacha, and they feel that this is one they have to practice regularly, right? So they're all about it, all through their family, telling everybody what they're doing wrong. I'm seeing some signs of recognition. You've probably met these people in your life. And then there's overwhelm. There's people who really get just washed over. They take on too much, too fast. And they're completely overwhelmed with all this new observance, and they don't know what to do. I learned from Tehila Yeager back in the day when I was very close with her that baby steps, baby steps, baby steps. So what does that mean? How do you read if you're in the right place or not? If you're feeling overwhelmed, you're going too fast. If you're feeling comfortable, you could push yourself a little more. So you should be somewhere between comfortable and overwhelmed, right? Living in that tension of opposites, where you're in a place of growing and learning, but not completely losing yourself and being overwhelmed. And so those are some risks in stage four. Stage five is plateau. You've made it, right? You've learned the halachas, you've switched out your whole wardrobe, your whole kitchen is kosher, you only go to the kosher restaurants now, you've given up all that stuff. You know, you're there, you've been there for a while. It's a strange phase for the Baal Teshuva who's been on this learning, upward path of learning and taking on new stuff, because the applause stops and you feel it stopping. And the rush of the newness stops. And here's a secret that a lot of people don't know. The Yetzirah takes a little break for new Baal Teshuvas and converts. It could be a few months, it could be 2 years even, but there is a break that the Yetzirah sits on the side. All of a sudden, during this plateau phase, the Yetzirah comes and says, you would look so cute in that skirt. It's a little short, I know, but how adorable is that on you? And you're thinking, it really is cute. And then you sit down and you realize it for sure shows all your knees sitting down. There's no way you can possibly pull it down far enough. And you're like, I don't know, but a lot of people are dressed in this. And you're like, wait a second, I don't recognize you at all, right? Or it comes to you and says, you know, chakras, it's really long. You have to daven the whole thing every day. And you're shocked that the Yetzirah is visiting you now like it's visiting other people. And you don't recognize this character in your life. And it comes back nice and strong during this plateau phase. So the hand clapping stops, the approval of your friends stops. Like, I mean, they still approve, but there's no more excitement and rush. The Yetzirah comes back, and you're no longer getting the rush of incorporating new. So now you just have to float along at arrived. And it's kind of weird territory being in arrived. And then people start to see you as arrived. And then they start to expect you to act like them. And you're not, necessarily. You think you are. That's another challenge. I should have put this as a challenge in this. Another challenge is you might think you're now like them. And they think you are a little bit like them, depending on your age and how well you can pronounce words and all that kind of stuff. I have one glitch that I have seen here is making shidduchim. That some people, really, especially for younger Baal Teshuva, let's say they became from 17, 18, 19, now they're 20, 21, 22, and people make shidduchim for them as if they're FFBs. They're not reading them an FFB, they're not, you know, suggesting they should marry somebody from birth, but they expect them to date like the from birth people date, right? Get a suggestion, get it checked out, meet a few times, make a decision. And of course, the person who's newly from wants to be held in such high esteem. I could date that way. That's the right way to date, and I'm doing it, right? And the people around them who were raised from think that's the right way to date, so that's the way you should be dating because you're from now. And I've seen disasters because of that. Not enough dating, not enough getting to know each other. No, the families don't know each other. They don't know how to check out. the person doesn't even know really what they're looking for, not just personality, but and they might be reassured when they express some fear. Some their teachers, I have spoken to people like this, where the teachers will say, "Don't worry, you're going to get to know her better after you get married." I counseled one Neural Elf couple like this, where he told me privately, first we started talking, and then he said, "You know what, I'm just going to step outside." He was in a very cold place. He said, "You know, I'm just going to step into the car, continue the conversation." I spoke to him for an hour, and he told me, "Our match is a bad match. It never should have happened in the first place. I knew I didn't know her before we got married. I went to my Rebbe, and I told him. And they said, just, you'll give it time. You'll see. You'll get to know her. You'll get married. And you can't know somebody anyway until you get married." And we got married, and I got to know her, and I realized, this was a terrible idea, and I don't know what to do now. And now we have two kids, and she doesn't get along with my parents, and I don't like how she keeps house. And it was amazing. And here's this person actually had achieved smicha already. I'll just give you a little insight. This is a disaster story. This is not common. But I'll just give you some insight into that person, into what could be. So I asked this person with smicha, Baal Tshuva, what would you do if you could do anything you wanted? Everybody agrees with you. This is the question I like to ask people. What would you do if you could do anything you wanted to do? You have enough money, you have enough time, you have enough energy, and everybody in your life agrees with you. What would you like to do? It's an important question to ask yourself so that you know, really, what do you want to do? Not what can you do, not if I had enough money. No, everybody agrees with you. You have the time, you have the energy. What do you want to do? So that's what I asked him. And his answer was, body surf. I'd like to body surf. I'm thinking, you're a rabbi working on a campus. I couldn't say that, of course. I kept my composure. But that's what he wanted. If he could do anything, he just wanted to revert to being a teenager before he ever became frum. And now he's stuck married to somebody frum. And because the two of them dated like FFBs, and they weren't, and they shouldn't have been counseled that way, it's a real risk when people look the look and people start to treat them like that. And this was a disaster. It's the worst disaster I saw, but I've seen other things like this. And it's very important to take the time in this phase to bring yourself into who you are as a firm person and try to become integrated in the plateau phase. We'll get to that more in a little bit. Let's just move
can
on.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Unless you want to move on.
No, no, it's fine. No, ask
us. So then if they shouldn't date like that, how should they date?
Excellent. Good. Okay, so let's go with this for now. Okay.
Okay.
If they shouldn't date like that, how should they date? If they shouldn't date like that, how should they date? So how should Baalei Tshuva date? With much more time. Much more time.
So you think that's the main issue, the time?
Time is a huge issue.
Okay.
Because if you date three or four times,
I don't think firm people should date three or four times.
I agree with you. I think at this point we're making mistakes in the firm community too.
Yeah,
marriages are
absolutely
falling apart. The divorce rate in the Orthodox community has skyrocketed in the last several years.
Yeah.
Part of that, I believe, as somebody who sews well, is lack of crafts in schools. What do you do when you do woodshop or sewing in school? You learn patience, right? If you learn how to sew or do woodworking, you learn how to start a project, put it down, come back to the project, make a mistake, come back, learn how to fix that mistake or incorporate it back into the project, put it down, come back and finish it later, and you made it. You accomplished it, and then you built a skill and patience, and you start again. Today's projects in most Jewish schools are the teacher cuts every little thing up, makes the prototype, hands the things out, and it's an exercise in gluing, and the kids produce a little frog puppet or whatever it is, and it's done. They did it in half an hour. There's no patience taught. Patience is so important, and we see kids today, they have no clue how to develop a relationship. As soon as it becomes uncomfortable, their patience hasn't been developed. They don't know how to deal with discomfort, and they right away are getting divorced in their first or second year of marriage. It's happening, as you see, happening. And if they're not, then they're just, other things are happening too inside their marriage. It's not healthy. So yeah, I think there should be longer dating altogether. But for sure for Baalei Tshuva, there needs to be longer dating, and there needs to be consideration of family background. So one of the things that took me a long time to really understand was the value of my background. A lot of Baalei Tshuva are very frustrated that they were born into non-firm families, and they want to leave it behind and just be like from people who had all that education, and they don't want to recognize their, they see their past as a liability rather than as something that could eventually empower. So I definitely fell into that, and I was very jealous of some of my teachers. Kosher jealousy, kinat sofrim tarbe chachma. But I was very jealous of Tehillah Yeager. You know, why couldn't I have a husband like that? Why couldn't I have brothers like that? Why couldn't I have a father like that? Like, how come I'm stuck in a family with no male role models, no like rich Torah background, no rich Torah teaching? Our Shabbos table, our Torahs are short, and usually I give them. You know, like. So not fair. Until I finally realized that actually I come from a long line of powerful women, and there are have to be examples of women who become who they are without men propping them up to become who they are. Of course, they're working in concert with, but there has to be different things. And I come from a line of pioneer women who changed the face of North America and changed families and struck out and created new paradigms. And I have that ability to create new paradigms. It's going to be in Yiddishkeit. But there's a strength in my past, and I can bring it into my present, and I can make it help me go forward into my future. And it's not a liability. It's empowering. I just have to figure it out, that I have strong generations behind me, and it can come into my future. So it takes people a long time to realize that, but you have to realize what's a good family match also. So that's one of the reasons why the shidduch system works for FFBs, is because the firm from birth population understands the concept of families going together. So it can devolve into a yichus countdown. How much yichus do you have? You know, there's a famous joke. You could save this for if you ever need it to explain how important yichus is, right? So there's a rabbi. He has a brother who's a thief. He's really embarrassed of his brother, the thief. So one day the rabbi's walking down the street and he sees his brother walking up the street. So he doesn't really want to be seen with his brother, the thief. So he crosses the street. And his brother is incensed. And he looks across the street and he says, "You, whose brother is a thief, cross from me, whose brother is a rabbi." So we see the ichus is very important. But what does it really mean? It means the kind of family you come from, the kinds of attitudes in your family, the kinds of approaches to the world of your family. So when I suggested the shidduch of my eldest, suggested the idea to my youngest daughter, I said, you know, I think it's a nice match because she's the right-wing child of her broad-thinking family. He's the right-wing child of his broad-thinking family. Both families are Baal Tshuvas, but both produced like a very right-wing child. So my youngest daughter said, "Great, they can get together and have narrow-thinking children." Hopefully they'll have broad-thinking children. But the family I got, by that time I got the family match is so important. Having a broad-thinking, eclectic family that they both came from was important, even though these children were fully established in the right-wing world, but they have different families who like to camp and aren't scared of pets, and that makes a difference, right? I mean, or whatever it is, the various different things that their families either saddled them with or gifted them with makes a difference. So I do think Baal HaTshuva need to be dating longer and investigating families and spend time with the other person's parents as part of the dating process. I think you need to see the family dynamics, and if you can live with that, because your spouse comes from those family dynamics.
You speak Spanish?
Odlo, Lizari.
Ella me dijo que va a aprender español para venir aquí. Ella ya es mor.
Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem.
Ani raiti shem sibachim. Ye whisky? Eto whisky.
Eto whisky.
Toda.
Es mi
consuegra.
La mamá de Yafa.
Very important to check out your in-laws and make sure you want them. Anyway, I think that is important in dating, and I think it would be important to counsel somebody if you're counseling dating for them to spend some time, or if they don't keep Shabbat, of course, then spend some time with the in-law family at an important family occasion. So you see the family, right? Whether it's Thanksgiving or some kind of holiday or family birthday, like they need to see a family event so they can see the family dynamics. How do the siblings interact? How do the parents interact with the siblings? That kind of thing. It's important to see.
Isn't that like creating like a lot of kesher, like with the family?
Isn't it creating a lot of kesher?
Yeah, like wouldn't that be like
that is the point.
Stage?
No, so for the dating Baal Tshuva couple, I think it's very important to create that kesher, or to before the kesher is created, to explore and see if you want to create that kesher, or at the very least to see if you're brave enough to take on what that person comes from, because some people come from dysfunctional families that you're scared of. Nevertheless, you'd be willing to marry the person because of the work that they've done to distance themselves from those attitudes. But you have to know that they come from those attitudes and they're in there, and it's going to be work that you're going to have to work with your spouse on and continually overcoming that, even if they've made the intellectual decision to overcome that. So you need to see it. It has to be part of the dating process.
Like a different stage, like once you engage more into the relationship once.
Yeah, yeah. You don't have to do that on date one. Do
no,
that after date
one.
Eight.
Yeah.
Like yeah. No. First, you see if there's any kind of anything. But I just think that in order to not have a disaster, Baal Tshuva should be dating much longer, 3 months, 6 months. But they need to see into the family. You know, it can't be a several week dating process, which it is often in Israel. You take a Neve student, match them with an Aish guy, and they date 3 weeks, and they're expected to get engaged, and they do get engaged then. And sometimes it works out, and sometimes it's a mess. So I think a longer dating process is really important to make good Baal Tshuva matches.
I totally agree, but like 6 months would be...
6 months is very long, no question about it.
And people, like, if you're a Baal Tshuva, like, you're used to touching people and everything, and now...
Right, not so easy. No question, it's not so easy to keep those halachos.
Yeah, but a marriage is longer than 6 months.
Right, a marriage is longer than 6 months,
sure,
right?
So sure, right. Like, to pay 6 months and then just, like, make a decision and, I don't know. Like,
right, it's a challenge. I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying it's easy to do. I'm just saying right now what we're doing is not so healthy, so we have to think about something else. So, yes, there will be challenges in the second paradigm as well. Yeah?
She's asking if a Baal Tshuva dates a FFB, will date the same a long time?
I do think that if a Baal Tshuva and an FFB are dating, they still need to take a long time, because there can be serious complications in that. It can definitely work, but there can be complications. I'll just give you a for instance, right? An FFB, not all, but many, received their Judaism from their family, and being Jewish means being part of a family. And for some Baal Tshuvas, not all, but some, being frum means leaving their family. So their experience of frumkeit is leaving family. They don't know how to be in family and be frum. So they're going to have to figure out that culture gap of the independence and the dependence on family and how to bridge that. And it would be very important for the Baal Tshuva to look inside the frum person's family, and for the frum from birth person's family, and the frum from birth person's to look inside the Baal Tshuva family and see what is there that they're going to have to contend with, and how can they talk about some of those paradigm shifts that will be there. There's much more dependence on parents in frum from birth people than there is in Baal Tshuvas. Right? And just because Baal Tshuvas left their parents and what they taught them in order to become frum. So they might. So here's another little piece that could be between FFBs and BTs. Right? Let's say there's the FFB child knows that their parents are a halachic authority. Certainly when it comes to regular stuff like kashrus, or how to get ready for Pesach, or how we kosher things, right? So they're going to call their mom or call their dad to ask, how do I do this? And the BT never would turn to their parents for that. They'll call their rav. They're going to want to call their rav for every little shaila, where the FFB is going to be really annoyed. I can ask my parents, right? Which might get into in-law issues, where the from birth person feels like the Baal Tshuva doesn't respect their parents, and the Baal Tshuva might not respect their parents, because you don't go by your parents when it comes to halacha, and it can get all... There's stuff like that. Not that it can't be ironed out, it's just things to be recognized in an FFB-BT match.
It's better to date Baal Tshuva and
So that's also a question. It really depends. It's nice to have... Hard to keep my circle of concentration. Also try to pose in a very...
very
nonchalant and natural way. I don't know if it has to always be Balchuva with Balchuva. But that does bring some more understanding to the table, that you've made a journey. You both have that internal chutzpah, that willingness to be different. It can also make for a couple that's too different. You know, both of their willingnesses to be different can keep them non-integrated. You know, so that could be a challenge that they face. And an FFB can anchor the Baal Tshuva and help them and give them background, give them past and history that's important for the Baal Tshuva also. So you can't say there's no formula, just things to be aware of.
I just have another example of that. One of my daughters married Baal Tshuva. I'll let you. Okay, one of my daughters married Baal Tshuva, and he came from a family, one brother, a couple of cousins, and that was it. He came to us while they were dating, and all of a sudden he's bombarded with 10 siblings and siblings-in-law and like 15 nieces and nephews, or it's like screaming, Uncle Dan, you know. And it was really a big culture shock, and it was good that he came to us many times to get used to this, because this was nothing like he was used to from before.
Right. Excellent. So large families, large involved families, large involved loud families, right?
These can be different types of families than a Baal Tshuva's loud, maybe, but large, not usually. So a lot of cooking, a lot of feeding. A lot of Baal Tshuvas are raised with the TV in every room. They go out to eat a lot. They had two siblings. Not always, but often they come from divorced parents. So they don't even know how a marriage is supposed to look, let alone a Torah marriage. So there's so much bridging that has to happen. I'll give you one more, just as long as we're here. One thing that I've noticed that's a challenge between FFBs and BTs is the Torah acquisition process. Right? So how does a BT acquire Torah? They chase it, they grab it, and they bring it into themselves. They read it, they seek it out, they learn it, they want it. The FFB acquires Torah by inhaling in their mother's home, in their kitchen. It's fed to them with their baby food. Right, brachas come slowly. You never have to learn how to categorize foods because your mother teaches you that with every new food you start to eat. Right? It's just part of your life. You learn about muktzah with your toys, right? And you learn about Shabbos with the Shabbos clothes that your mother buys you, and it's so much fun. And it's just a very slow inculcation through your life. It's a process of absorbing, not a process of chasing. This can present a challenge for the BT parent and their FFB child. Because BT parents, by nature, are fervent. If you know that word in Yiddish, how do you say fervent? On fire, right? They're passionate. And turns out not all FFB children are passionate. Some are just plain old Jewish, right? Could you imagine such a thing? And yet it's true. It's possible that a very passionate person could give birth to a child who's relatively complacent. And the very passionate parent wants the child to be making siyums and you know, growing and steiging and grabbing and getting and burning forward. And they're just like, just want to read Mishpacha and chill. So it can cause some parenting gaps. Just something to be aware of in dealing with these gaps between FFBs and BTs. There are culture gaps that need to be thought about. I'll give you one culture gap for Gerim that I saw. It took me a while to see this, because for a long time I saw myself as a Baal Tshuva, and I really did not respect the difference between Baal Tshuvas and converts until I grew up much older. One day, I'm giving a Shabbaton in South Carolina. I'm walking with a woman who's a geneticist, PhD geneticist, doing research in genetics. And she's 40, not married. We're chatting, and she was telling me a little bit, like, should she, maybe she traded her career for a husband because she's not married. Anyway, she's a geneticist, so I tell her, oh, I have a son who wants to be a geneticist. And he's really excited about it. He's really learning a lot about genetics now. Either he wants to be a geneticist or raise goats in the Golan.
So she said, I also wanted to raise goats in the Golan. But my father told me, I didn't survive hungry for you to raise goats in the Golan. And I thought to myself, there is no sentence like that anywhere in my family. Nowhere. No one of my relatives anywhere would say, we didn't pioneer out west in Michigan for you to... It's not there. It's just not there. So I realized there's this transgenerational trauma that's in Jews by birth, that's not in Jews by choice. So there's differences there. Even if you're very acculturated, there's still some significant differences there. One of them is guilt. Jews by choice from Catholic backgrounds understand how to use guilt. But Jews by choice from Protestant backgrounds don't know how to use guilt. So it wasn't until my kids were teenagers when I realized there's this whole tool I'm not accessing. I should really learn how to lay a guilt trip, right? So there's cultural differences that are there. Anyway, let's get back to, okay, so that's all in Plateau. That leads us, some of these problems lead us right into phase six, which is disillusionment. Not everybody hits this phase, but many do, whether it's in the dating process, whether it's in the business world, whether it's raising their children. But at some point, the idealistic person who took on Torah because it's beautiful, because the families that they saw were beautiful, because they love it, because they're idealistic, at some point they're going to meet somebody who's nasty, rude, condescending, dishonest, treats their kids mean, expects too little of them or too much of them. Right? It's going to happen. And what happens when that happens? You could maybe dismiss one, depending on how big it is, but it's going to happen. A kid gets abused. Whatever it is, it happens. So there are many different responses that can happen to disillusionment. So the first one is abandonment, right? They run up against disillusionment and they say, are you kidding me? That's it. I'm out of here. I've had it. If that's the way people are, I'm dropping the whole thing. This is not what I signed up for. Right? So that's one response. Another response is, I'm responsible. I believe this is true. I'm going to do it. But this is not what I expected. And they get bitter about it. So they maintain a bitterness, but still keep mitzvot, but they walk through angry. And they start to focus on the hard parts in the community. You know, in Tomer Devorah, it discusses the Yud Gimel Midas HaRachamim, the 13 qualities of mercy of Hashem. And one of them is Ki Chafetz Chaim Hu, that Hashem, Ki Chafetz Chesed Hu, Hashem loves Chesed, He desires Chesed. And it talks about, the Ramak talks about, just translating a little bit, but he talks about how Hashem has a Chesed museum with angelic curators that take care of the Chesed that He collects from Klal Yisrael. He collects examples of Chesed. He loves Chesed so much that He has a whole Chesed collection, and when He gets angry at Klal Yisrael, He asks the Malachim to bring out the examples of Chesed so He could see them first to appease the anger before He decides what to do. If you love something, you collect it. If you love Chesed, you collect Chesed, and then you can have it in your life. Some people love to be angry. And they like, for some reason, it feeds them to be bitter. And they start to collect examples of how nasty people are, how rude people are, how non-Toradic that person who Shomer Shabbos is. And they collect it, and they collect it, and they collect it, and they make a whole collection of negative examples, which it's possible to accomplish. And people can maintain their observance, but become very bitter people through collecting negative examples. So that's one of the possibilities in disillusionment. Another one is to not become necessarily bitter, but just to become a little more robotic. Okay, I'm doing this. This is life. People are people. Some are nice. Some are not nice. I'm just going to live with it. Whatever. I'm past my plateau stage, right? Just keeping Torah and mitzvahs. And they become like some from birth people become,
kind of a little bit empty in their observance, just doing it, because that's what you do. They're already in the community. They're clicked in. They're not leaving, but they've lost their passion. Then there's people who actually become stronger through it. They see it, and they realize, oh my gosh, this is not what I signed up for. Actually, this is not what Hashem signed up for either. He created the Jewish people to be a certain way, and maybe I actually have a gift to bring to the Jewish people, which is my bren and my lack of acceptance of this. I find that that is something that Baal Tshuvas have in concert with converts as well, is a little bit of a lack of patience, right? Because now that they discovered this, like, there's a program here, and it needs to happen. I have one friend who's a convert. She's in her 70s. She's very impatient with Hashem about Mashiach, and she talks to Hashem regularly. She's like, Hashem? And I think it's great. I have one friend who converted. Before she converted, she dressed fully tznius. This is such a funny story. I don't know if you know those words in English. We'll see. It's a good way of translating. So she was. I was next to her at the copy machine in school in the office. And the school, the day school, had just hired a secretary who was Jewish, but not yet religious, not observant. So the secretary had a tattoo on her neck and a feather earring. And she's just learning the first things about Judaism by working in this day school. And this woman who was going to convert soon, her kids are in the school, but she hadn't yet converted, but her hair is covered, collarbone, sleeves, skirt, the whole thing, right? She says something, and the other woman, the secretary, says, well, I don't even really know very much about Judaism, not like you guys who know it all. And so this woman who wasn't yet Jewish said, I don't know it all. I'm not even Jewish yet. I just want to convert. So the secretary said, oh my gosh, it's like you're a drag queen and I didn't even know it. Can you imagine? Meanwhile, this person was so impatient to convert because she knew Mashiach was coming very soon. And you can't convert when Mashiach comes. And she didn't want to miss the deadline. And why are the rabbis taking so long? So, as somebody who's been Jewish a little longer, I knew she probably didn't have to worry about that. But we should be worried about that, right? Why are we complacent? Why should we feel like, you know what, so you'll wait an extra week, an extra month, don't worry, you're still going to make the cutoff, right? We should be like, Mashiach should be here tomorrow, that's all there's to it. Like, no, it's time already. So, but I have seen that there's much more patience in people who are generations Jewish, because there's the generations, and they know generations came before, and generations come after, and they're a link in the chain, and they'll do what they have to get to the next generation, but they're not as impatient. People who just came new to the program are like, new? There's a program here. Let's make it happen. Let's go. Why do we have to wait so long for everything to get perfected? It's time. So I'm in that camp. I sat down with one of my Rebbetzins last week, one of the Rebbetzins I take care of. And we sat down in a restaurant together. And we just, you know, greeted each other, sat down. She said, so, Lisa, did you take over the world yet? She knows that's my plan. Not yet, but it's coming. It's Radishim. Take it over for good. Elevate everybody. Educate everybody.
That's what they all say.
Right. Okay. Then the final stage is blending, where you're really fully integrated. And that actually doesn't usually happen for a Baal Tshuva. It could happen maybe for their children, more likely for their grandchildren. It does take probably around 3 generations to be seamlessly blended. Because it turns out that Baal Tshuvas stay people with chutzpah and lack of patience and bren, often, not always, as we mentioned. But and not only that, let's say that they move to Yerushalayim, they live in Har Nof, and they're doing fabulously, looking like they're everybody, they still know all those songs they heard in high school. They still acted in a mixed play. They still went camping as a child. They still owned a pet at some point in their life, right? Whatever it was, they have that there, which means their thinking is a little different. And they might say, give a different answer to a child, or allow them a little bit more breath, or let them read a few extra books, or
the opposite.
Or the opposite. The opposite also happens, right? You can. It's interesting to see that in the parenting paradigms, they many times there are swings for Baal Teshuva. Those who are like, they just want to make Torah the sweetest it could be, and so they have no control over their children. Their children are brats because everything has to be so sweet and fabulous. Or they're the parents who make their 2-year-old wait 6 hours, right? They're crazy with it. I'm not joking. No touching muktzah, no running on Shabbos because they might fall and draw blood from their knee. I've seen people like that, right? So you could you have these swings. You do have integrated people too, but yeah.
Question. So there's no like in between stage where the Baal Teshuva is like comfortable because you get disappointed, and then the blending happens only to your children and your grandchildren.
No, so you
what about the Baal Teshuva?
The Baal Teshuva can definitely fake it really well.
Yeah.
And pass. People don't even have to know.
Look, you will never get that air closed, right?
Right.
No, I mean, you should wear a shadow.
No matter how many shades you put on.
It's true. Right. Is this... Right.
No matter how
from
you
want.
Well, the tattoo. You'll always have that tattoo.
Yeah. Right. And I know a few rabbis with a few holes in their ears, too.
Right.
Yep. Yep. So, and it will never go away. It's always there for them. So, but not only is that there for them, but so are there some of their attitudes. Yes, they've shifted, but they may have a little more breadth or a little more narrowness. They may be a little stricter. So that's there for them. It takes their kids, who think their parents are weird, to learn from a few other families and then learn as they have kids that their parents are actually pretty great. And then they have kids, and those kids can be fully, seamlessly blended. Because a BT, Ben... No, an FFB, Ben BT, is different than FFB, Ben FFB. Right? You raise FFB children, but they are influenced by the Baal Teshuva parents. So many times I speak to FFB kids, and they'll say, you know, my parents are Baal Teshuva, so blah, 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 blah. So having Baal Teshuva parents makes a difference, even if you have a very successful FFB family. Still, there are differences. Right? There's more breadth. There's more looseness on minhagim. I'll just give you an interesting... Yeah.
How can a Baal Teshuva make any establish with the cultural fighting with his family?
Okay, that's an excellent question. How can a Baal Teshuva work with the cultural fighting within their family? Ask me that question.
To grow his children.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
How can
I
do it?
Do I answer that one now? Or I forgot where it's going to go anyway, so I'll do that. Oh, minhagim. First I want to do minhagim, and then I'll answer that question. Okay, so... So Baal Teshuva often, not always, because some Baal Teshuva really find a Rebbe and they take a whole minhag package that belongs to their Rebbe. But many do not. Many choose minhagim from what they like. Right? So in our family, for instance, we're not actually Sephardic, but we do a lot of Sephardic things, including throw the challah. But we're Ashkenazim, so we don't need any kidney on Pesach, and we're careful about that. We do have gebrachts. That's part of the family. We wait 3 hours because that's so much more comfortable than six. So we asked a child about that. Whatever. So you could be crazy like us and have a whole bunch, right? So that's something that many Baal Teshuvas have is a mixed package of minhagim. And I found for myself, maybe not full respect for minhagim, what they are. So it took me until very recently, I had two experiences where I really started to understand minhagim better. I know minhag kedin, and they're very important, etc. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about really the essence of minhagim. So when my daughter got married, she was engaged at the same time as an FFB, Bat FFB, was engaged across the street. So she was engaged. She wanted a thicker veil, dek techel. I made her one. Sipora from across the street comes over and says, I want one of those. I said, no problem. You can either borrow Sarah's, or if the white doesn't match your dress, I'll make you one. She said, no. It's not our minhag. I'm not allowed. And you know what you get when you spell minhag backwards, right? That's right, Gehenim. I had never heard that before. But she had, raised in her family. So I just absorbed that as an interesting piece of information, collecting my little bits of pieces of acculturation along the way, how this family is very minhag focused. to the point where this girl who's getting married will not be able to have the privacy that she wants to daven without being gazed at as she walks to the chuppah, even though it'd be pretty easy to put an extra few layers of tulle. But no, she can't, because it's not their minhag. Okay, got that. Then one day I'm in my house, I'm looking around, I have a lot of antiques from my family. I have some things from the 1700s. I have quite a few things from the 1800s. And my sterling silver flatware was my great-grandmother's. That's from the late 1800s, early 1900s. Has dates on the back of some of the spoons, 1897, 1898, 1900. I have enough family things to give something to each one of my children. A few more than, so that they'll have enough to give to their children, too. I have quite a few family things. I thought, that's so nice. I have family things that I can give to my children. And I thought, well, a lot of Jewish families don't have that, because they haven't been in one place long enough to acquire enough old stuff that they have enough to give to each child something old from their family. And then I realized, that's what a minhag is. A minhag is something that belonged to your great-great-grandparents, and it's something you can give to each one of your children, only if you keep it. Only if it's exactly that. Then it's the minhag of your great-great-grandparents, and you can pass it on, and they own something of your family heritage. But if you change it, it's not your family minhag anymore, and you can't pass it on. So I had that insight really helped me understand the importance of keeping a minhag just so, even when maybe it doesn't matter that much, the tune you sing Kadesh Ur Chatz to. But if that's your family tune, that's the tune you sing, because that's the tune your great-great-grandparents sang, and that's how you give a family possession to your children. Okay, so now the question is, how do you deal with the cultural fighting, the dealing with it? So, first of all, I have a book about it. It's in English. It's on my website. It's free. You can download it. I wrote it together with my mother, because I wanted to have a book for parents of Baalei Tshuva, who are having a hard time and resolve their hard time not by the parents becoming frum, but by the parents becoming understanding and by the child becoming understanding. So it's called Growing Together. It's on my website, abiteoftorah.com. You can download it under books. Nevertheless, this is what you have to do. You have to love your family and they have to love you, and you have to come to a place of respect and understanding. Right. So you're saying the children of the Baal Tshuva are dealing with their non-from cousins and are having a hard time. That's a hard thing. There's just no question about it. And you have to see it as a workshop specifically designed for those children by Hashem. Once you start to understand that difficulties are lovingly given by Hashem to help bring out the best in you, even when it's not a workshop you feel like signing up for, but Hashem knows better, so He signs you up for it. So He signed those kids up for having cousins that aren't frum, and maybe even for having cousins that look down on them or tease them about being frum. So you do have to strengthen your children in knowing that what we're doing is the right way of doing it. They don't have the benefit of Torah. You don't want to use condescension too much, but that is a way that people use it as a first step. Isn't it so sad your cousins don't know Torah? That you do, so you'll keep it this way. That's good, but that is a little condescending. That's the truth. So you have to be careful not to be too condescending in teaching your own children, especially because that can come back to bite you when maybe the cousins were exposed to something and they chose not to take it. And they can say, well, I told them the Torah, and now they don't want it. Now what? So everybody makes their own choices. Everybody's a Baal Bechira. You're not a Baal Bechira when you're a child yet, but you become that as you get older. So you just have to strengthen them. So sometimes you have to limit contact, and sometimes you have to speak to the parents and say, I really want our kids to have a relationship. They're cousins. Why should they be distant from each other? And yet, it's hard for me. I don't want my kids watching any TV or videos, and it seems like there's always something on in your house. Is there any way that we could make it work so that our kids could play together a little bit more? That works for younger ages, maybe, if they're understanding, but as they get older, now that group has watched a lot of TV, and their conversation includes it, and that group hasn't, and their conversation doesn't, and it gets very tricky. What can you do? You just have to know that that's the way Hashem put you into that family by choice. Hashem makes the matches. So those cousins were chosen for those cousins, and those children were chosen for those parents, and you were chosen to be the mother of those children who are the cousins of those children. Hashem matched you up for a reason.
I just want to state that there are a lot of people who are not Balei Tshuva, and they have relatives who aren't from.
That's correct. This is not a Baal Tshuva only problem, it turns out. Because today we do definitely have, unfortunately, even from nice, strong from families, either people going off the derech or stepping to the side of the derech, not fully off, or marrying out Lo Aleinu. So we definitely have situations in from families too where there's a lot of family challenges. So really, it's important to understand that you want to be Kaddishim Shemayim at every step, and you want to take the high road at every step, and that people will evaluate and reevaluate later on. So it's not just about what's happening right now. Even if you have to make a difficult decision to pull your kids in a little bit right now, even if your kids are a little frustrated by it, and even if they're a little frustrated by it, and again, you have to weigh and balance all the time, but if you take the high road and really try to be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim, they'll reevaluate in 5 years, and reevaluate in 10 years, and reevaluate in 20 years, and see, wow, she really did her very best to extend herself to the ends of her capacity, and we appreciate what she did, whatever it is, but people, it's not just the evaluation of the here and now. There is later on understanding of things that come up, so you have to know about that too. Okay. Any other questions right now? Okay. What was that other thing I wanted to bring up that I forgot in the middle? Okay, so in dealing with Balei Tshuva, you have to. I think it's important to understand these stages. These stages are not linear. Just like other stages of other processes, people can move back and forth between stages. You might start in the wonder and awe stage, move into trepidation of observance, move back out of that, move into acceptance, take a step out of acceptance. You know, you can go back and forth between some of these stages. It's good to know that they exist so that you can see them, but not to necessarily expect linear progression through them.
Yeah, sometimes, but also, we have to. I think that we have to help the Baal Tshuva not to be so hard on himself. Like you were saying, if Hashem put you there and you have this tattoo or you were an actor or whatever, so maybe use these forces to help some other people and inspire them. Like, I've met a lot of people who were actors or were, I don't know, singers, whatever, and they used this as a plus in their, but in queue, bringing more people closer. Like saying, I'm not into it anymore, but I was in Hollywood and everything shines so nice, and this is where I'd rather be here. And some people relate in this time better to people that they had like a past and say, okay, if you did it, I can do it.
Right.
So I also think that you shouldn't hide your background so much. Sometimes it's also something good to talk to people about. Right.
So you're right. A lot of people do actually try to hide their backgrounds. A lot of people try to. I have met people who don't want their kids to know that they're Balei Tshuva, and they keep that whole secret. And I think a way that you could do that relatively successfully is if the person who makes Aliyah, or the person whose parents die young, Lo Aleinu, and they have to really separate themselves from their families. But they're creating a fake life that eventually kids need to know about their heritage. And kids, I think, should see into the strength of a parent's journey and what they've done and what they left behind and the choices that they made. And people choose different things. So I think it is important to not hide your background and to encourage people to integrate. And there is a separation period that's necessary in the very beginning. So I think it's a separation from relationships, and you do often balance you step on family members' toes initially. One thing that it's important, even if a Baal Tshuva is smart, and many are not, right, in terms of family relationships, but a young Baal Tshuva may not be smart enough to not say to their parents, you raised me wrong, you taught me wrong, you do it wrong, you practice it wrong, you eat wrong, you observe wrong, right? Some Baal Tshuva say that to their parents, but even if they're smart enough not to say it, the way they live screams it at their parents. So if they wear long sleeves, they're telling their parents, you dress wrong, and I dress right. And the way their kitchen is says, you eat wrong, and I eat correctly. And the way they keep Shabbat says, you function incorrectly, and I know the true way. So even if they're not saying it, their parents are hearing it. And it's so hard on the parents to hear. You think I'm incompetent, you think I'm incapable, you think I'm immoral, you think I'm incorrect, you think everything that we gave you is worth nothing. This creates big problems in families. So the Baal Teshuva has to be very careful to really respect the family that they came from and look hard for traits that they can be thankful for in their family. Is there tenaciousness in the family? Thank your parents for giving you that. Is there independence in your family? Thank your parents for breeding that into you. And is there the ability to try to help your parents see that you're the one who gave me the ability to look at the world and think about it and make a choice where I think is good? I'm not judging you about it, and you have to not be judging about it. I'm not judging you about it, but I've made a choice and we've reached different conclusions and I still respect you. It's a very hard place to get to. It takes a long time and a lot of maturity. I can't say I was there when I was a kid. Definitely not. But I've grown as I've matured. And it's a place that I hope that many Baal Teshuva could get to. In the back of my book, I have a letter to the Baal Teshuva, because the book's written for the parents. But there's a letter to the Baal Teshuva to lighten up on your parents. Because that's not what they expected. That's not what they signed up for. They signed up to raise you to be secular like them, or raise you to be conservative, whatever it is, like them. And you're the game changer. So you're the one who has to work harder on being kind and caring and respectful of your parents. Do as much as you can to learn the halachas for whatever you can keep in your parents' house. But yeah, we do need to bring our backgrounds in and then look for what we can respect what our backgrounds have given us, how we can grow with it and share with it. Not everybody Baal Teshuva wants to do kiruv necessarily. Also took me a while to realize that. Sometimes you only can see the world through your own lenses. So not everybody wants to say where they were. Sometimes people are embarrassed that they were a singer or an actor or how they sang or acted. And they don't want that to be brought forward. But just to look at the qualities of what is there and what you can bring into your new life, that's important. And to not be hard on yourself. So, because a lot of people do, they want to take it on all right away. You have to be honest with where you're holding and how much you can grow. And I think as Makarvim, we can help hold people gently in their process, encourage them, and then pull them back a little bit if they need it, just to say, it's okay. Take some time here before you take the next step so that you can integrate it a little bit more. Okay, any more questions? Comments? Thoughts? Stories? Experiences? Yeah. I'm gonna give you the mic.
We've been today talking about kiruv, but there's many levels in kiruv. So how would you start describing what kiruv means? Because here you can find the lots of Baal Teshuva, we are making kiruv. What's kiruv? What's enough kiruv? What's the effort enough that you have to do? What for? Like, what's the goal of the kiruv?
Okay. That's way too big a question for this class right now. But I do want to say this. It's something I didn't get to yesterday. And that is, as Makarvim, we have to consider to what we are Makarving people. So if we're being Makarv people to the Torah is beautiful all the time in every age. But it can't be lived in a cave or a mountaintop. You have to live the Torah among people. And it turns out that not every community is a healthy community. So you have to understand what you're being makarv the person to. So as makarvim, it behooves us to work hard to strengthen our communities so that our communities are strong and beautiful and supportive and understanding and rooted and caring and loving. So we definitely have to work on, we call that kiruv krovim, but really there shouldn't be, I think, there shouldn't be a line between Kiruv Krovim and Kiruv Rechokim. If you care about other Jews, you should be reaching out to other Jews to make their lives better and stronger and to give nachas to Hashem. So Hashem gets nachas from a Baal Teshuva, and Hashem gets nachas from an FFB who comes into a different relationship or a stronger relationship also. So everybody needs to be strengthened. Everybody needs to be reached out to. Everybody needs to be rooted. And certainly our firm community needs that too, so that hopefully the disillusionment phase isn't as regular or as strong as it might be. But we definitely need to make efforts to increase the kiruv of the entire community, but then especially to increase ourselves. Because really what we're doing is attracting them with our own light. That's our main attraction tool, is how much we love it, how much we've integrated it, how much simchat ha'chaim we have, simchas ha'chaim, depending on how you pronounce things. So it's important to increase our own simchas ha'chaim, our own simchat ha'chaim, that we should be able to project that and have that ripple into the people around us, hopefully strengthening everybody and our potential Baal Teshuva, so that when they're attracted in, they're attracted into a community that's actually functional and caring and loving. So I would recommend people here in this, I mean, every community is different, and Mexico is a different community than the United States, so I don't fully understand all the dynamics of Mexico. You'll have to translate for yourselves. Excuse me, but it is a warm community and also a closed community. I forgot how Rabbi Edelstein said it yesterday, that was so nice. Instead of saying that the community is divided into so many different parts, he said so many different strengths. I don't remember how he said that. It was so nice. So many strong communities, which is great that there's so many strong communities, but it might mean that there's not enough flow between communities or acceptance between. But I mean, even in families, I noticed as a mother in Denver, where we host a lot of girls from Mexico come to the Beis Yaakov there, many of the mothers come and comment, it's so nice, your community is so nice, you have so many friends. The friends reach out to each other so much. And so I would ask them, why don't you don't have that in Mexico? And many say, no, we have family. We have really strong families, but there's not as strong across-family friendships. So I think that is a culture here. I don't know if that's a problem or not a problem, but something to look at and think about. Is that conducive to bringing people in, or could that be a barrier for people's integration if they don't have a strong family and they do need to be included in somebody else's family, but there's not the tradition here of embracing Jews who are strangers, right? We have Shabbat.com in the States. It really is supposed to be for the whole world, but Shabbat.com, such a great idea. You just can sign up as a guest or a host or both. And then you can look and see where the hosts are whenever you're traveling and just send them an email through Shabbat.com looking for a Shabbos meal. Can you host me? Or looking, I get people who are coming to conferences in Denver all the time. Instead of them having to find somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody, they just go on Shabbat.com, look in Denver, see that, and they can look at my profile. We have two dogs. That attracts some people and puts some people off. But I have it in there. So if you're scared of dogs, don't come to us. But some people pick us because we do, because they know that's the type of firm family they want to spend Shabbos with. So, and we just host strangers all the time. And we meet, it's great. It's a great way to meet people from all around the world. So it's something to think about here. Have the strength of the family, and you want to have that strength, and maybe to open a little bit so that you can include more people in your wider family circle so that more people can be strengthened. It's also part of the Kiruv process. Yeah.
I would like to point out, though, that all these phases and all these problems or strengths are also for people who come from more modern backgrounds,
yes,
not just Baal Teshuva. And you have extra family dynamic problems because the parents say, I keep Shabbos, I keep kosher, why isn't that good enough for you?
Right. That's definitely true. We have some phrases, I don't know if you know these words, mitchazek, mitchazeket. That refers to not a Baal Teshuva, but somebody who comes from a modern Orthodox family who, here's an English word for you, flips out. You know the word flipping out? There's a great song by Blue Fringe. You can find it online, Flipping Out. But the refrain is, I'm flipping out. My Rebbe is shepping nachas. My parents are kicking my
Tochas. So, right. Do you know that song?
That's how you sing it.
Yeah, it's great. Anyway, so, right, but that is the dynamic that the flipping out person has, because they aren't going, one of those lines in the song is, I just heard a half-hour halacha shir, I have to change the way I've been living for 18 years. So that is the life of the flipping out kid. Anyway, so there's that, and then we have chozer b'tshuva, that's Baal Tshuva in Hebrew. We also have the concept of chozer b'sheila. That's somebody who became frum and left their frumkeit. It's a chozer b'sheila. So there's all kinds of these. Anyway, there are family dynamics in all of them, and people who become frum. And now I'm seeing also similar things in people, in kids of frum families who become either less frum or not frum, but aren't freaking out off the derech. They're not like drug addicted and completely promiscuous. They just choose not to observe as their parents have observed. There's very similar dynamics there. How do you deal with that kid who's challenging in that way? So there's a lot of different things to learn, how we could embrace each other in more loving ways and keep pathways open for people to come back to a true sense of Torah. I do have my article translated into Spanish relatively poorly, I now understand. But if you want it, I have copies of it here, or you can go online and take it also. And I have my book online if you want it, Growing Together, for how parents and children could live in the same garden and grow together but not become tangled up. So there's that for parents of Baal Tshuva, parents and family of Baal Tshuva. And I think we'll end on that note for now, right? Thanks.